Welcome. I'm your host, Anjua Maximo, and you are listening to the Electric Feminine Podcast. In a society hell-bent on controlling and exploiting a woman's body and sexuality, I created the Electric Feminine to bring together a community of women dedicated to unlearning the negative messaging we've been taught about ourselves. I invite you to learn with me from some of my favorite coaches, educators, and friends in the world of spirituality, sensual embodiment, and sexual empowerment. This is about redefining beauty and sexuality for ourselves. This is for understanding, healing, and celebrating our divine feminine energy from head to heart to yoni. Let's go. Hello, 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 everyone. I'm so excited. Today, I have international burlesque sensation, a paragon of glitz and glamour, Josephine Baker aficionado. This is how Pearl Noir's bio begins, and I am here for it. So Pearl Noir has been performing since 2008 and has been named one of the world's top two burlesque performers by 21st Century Burlesque magazine 3 years in a row. She has performed with one of my favorites, Dita Von Teese, and has starred in numerous shows all over the world. As an intuitive healer and transformative coach, Pearl specializes in guided meditation and burlesque-inspired healing rituals that help women reconnect to their erogenous zones, voice, boundaries, and a sensual energy. A quote of Pearl's that I absolutely love: until you fall in love with yourself, chances are you'll search for surrogates to fill any voids or to validate your existence. Your relationship with your reflection will become the blueprint for all connections to follow. Wow.
Ooh.
I mean, hello, welcome.
Hello, hi, and hello again.
I mean, that your whole life, I'm just like, if I could have just been a fly on the wall, the lady who collects your feathers, whatever I gotta do.
Oh my goodness. Yes, and thank you. It's been a ride. It has been similar to Dynasty, Mommy Dearest, the Josephine Baker, Frida, Geisha realness. It has been all of those things combined.
So can we do all of that in your next show costume? Embody all of it.
Every single thing. I mean, ooh, that would be a costume.
I'm just saying.
Yes.
Just saying. That would be something to watch. So here's the thing. Burlesque to me, I didn't really, I have to admit, I didn't know a lot about it before Dita kind of got, Dita Von Teese started blowing up a little bit. Yeah. You started seeing her a lot of places. And prior to that, I had heard of it, but I'd always thought it was kind of something that was a little more old school. Mm-hmm. You know, I know it's been around for almost 200 years, like since the 1840s.
Yeah, it's one of the original, or I like to tell people, it's one of the oldest art forms of theater.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been around. It's had many, many iterations, and it's still kicking. It's like a very, bless my heart for what I'm about to say, but I'm so Southern. Burlesque is like a beautiful, glamorous roach. You just are not, you're not going to get rid of that thing. I grew up in the ghetto and it shows. I always like to bring it back to my ghetto roots, y'all.
I fucking love it. Okay, amazing. So, and now I know different though. I absolutely do, because I started to see, and then there was a place in LA when I was living out there called 40 Deuce. And okay, and they were doing like, they had the three-piece jazz band playing or whatever, you know, that style of music. And then the girls came out and I saw athleticism. I saw artistry. I saw grace. I saw sex. I saw all the things.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
and that's what it embodies. But you know, the beauty of burlesque and why I think it's never going to go away is because of the theater roots. So it can have many iterations. So at 40 Deuce, that's what they did. But then you also have many people like my dear friend Murray Hill, mm-hmm. who's a comedian and does a lot of burlesque vaudeville style shows. And Murray Hill is keeping the original iteration of burlesque alive, which is comedy.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, ma'am. And a lot of people don't really understand the connection to burlesque and comedy and theater. So a good example of a burlesque show that was on TV would be like I Love Lucy A movie that is very burlesque inspired to me is, and now I'm about to show my age here, but we're going to go for it. Hollywood Shuffle.
Oh, hell yeah.
I'm going to get you, sucker. Yeah. And Living Color is also a burlesque sort of dynamic so and structure.
So you're saying basically like the shows that we think of as sketch comedy today.
That's burlesque.
Wow.
That's burlesque. That's burlesque.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know. Yeah. So how did you find your way to burlesque?
You know, the ancestors guided me there. Mm-hmm. And I feel personally called by Josephine Baker. But in regards to like how it actually happened, I found myself in New Orleans when I was about 23. So I on my bio, I say that I started in 2008 because that's when the burlesque community found out about me. But I really started my journey in 2003 in New Orleans. I moved there to be with my high school sweetheart. I just was like, yeah, I'm going to move there. I'm 23, have anything to do, and I want to perform. And I knew New Orleans had a really beautiful nightlife scene. So I went there, and the first thing I wanted to do was find somewhere to work. So I was looking through the newspaper for auditions, and I saw this Black woman. Uh-huh. She put out an ad, and she was like, hi, I am producing an all-Black burlesque musical. And I'm going to produce and direct, like, and she produced the music as well.
Wow.
And her name was Jeannie Hatt, and the name of the show was Backstage at Da Funky Bee. And so I went.
The best.
I think I'm going to update my bio and put all this information in there.
Please do. Golden. Please do.
I went in and I auditioned for Backstage at Da Funky Bee, got the role of Lolly Fadici, who was an ex burlesque diva turned crackhead, if you will. Basically, first of all, her boyfriend's name was Tron.
Okay.
So that lets you know everything you need to know about Lot. Okay. Her boyfriend's name was Tron.
Enough said.
Everybody listening, Tron. Just pause and let that sink in because sometimes stereotypes are true. So.
Oh, I love you.
I love you. So I, you know, auditioned for that. And of course, you know, was just enthralled and said, okay, we're going to just immerse ourselves into this role. So that's when I started researching Black burlesque performers. And it was very sad because, of course, there wasn't as much evidence mm-hmm. of Black burlesque performers. And so we were just both like, damn, we have to figure this out. This is why this show is important. But that's where I really found out that I loved badass women. And when I really found out about Josephine Baker, like I had heard of her before, but when I started doing this research, I was like, oh my God, this woman's life mirrors mine. And then not only did I find out about Josephine Baker, but I found out that in Vegas, there's this competition called Miss Exotic World. Mm-hmm. And there's a burlesque hall of fame and a burlesque museum. And that the burlesque living legends, like women who actually did burlesque in the 40s, 50s, 60s, yeah. and some in the 70s, that's where they go to not only mingle with the new generation, but to perform.
Oh.
And I saw that two Black burlesque legends who were at the time, one of them has since passed, that they were going to be there. And their names were Lottie the Body. And she was like one of the few dark skinned burlesque legends that I found evidence of. Okay. And Toni Elling, who I have the pleasure of saying is one of my burlesque moms, she's still alive. Toni Elling was Duke Ellington's protege.
Wow.
So that's how I began doing burlesque. And also, I have to tell you, what really made me decide that Josephine picked me to carry on her legacy was when I went to go compete in 2008 at the Burlesque Hall of Fame. I paid tribute to her. This is when I was young, honey. I was doing backflips and toe touches back in my younger days.
Right?
Okay. I can think of younger days. Yes, in there. And I got off stage and Toni Elling and Lottie were like, we used to work with Josephine and you remind us of
wow,
her.
Wow. What a compliment.
Yeah. And so that's how my love affair with burlesque and Josephine Baker in particular began.
Wow. Okay. So if y'all don't know who Josephine Baker is, I need you to Google, go to the bookstore, yes. get the book. Phenomenal, phenomenal woman, you know, beyond her notoriety as a famous burlesque dancer. She just did so much. She was actually a peace ambassador for the United States, wasn't she, or something like that?
Yes, for the French Resistance, she was a beautiful spy.
Right.
She would hide secrets and invisible ink on her sheet music. And then she worked very close with the NAACP, and she was actually an important figure for the civil rights movement. But no one knows that, you know.
Right.
We know about Martin Luther King and everyone, and we should. You know, I'm not saying that you should take anything away from what the men did, but I'm just also saying that it would be lovely, you know, if we knew that she was the only woman to speak at the March on Washington. She was alongside Martin.
Well, we all know that all these narratives are missing big chunks to the story. So we're going to leave it at that. But yes.
We'll talk about that another
That's
day.
A whole nother podcast. All right. So you found similarities between your life, you know, what you experienced, and Josephine Baker. Did you find, you know, was it a cathartic healing to do the burlesque? Did it, you know, what was it for you that really hit you?
It was very cathartic and it was very healing, especially to find out about this woman who was raised basically in the slums, who was abused all her life, who was told she was ugly her entire life, just like I was, and went to Paris on a whim and became this sensation and was finally told that she was beautiful, was finally revered for her talents. And not only that, but I was just like, this woman went from the ghetto to an actual castle. She became a businesswoman. She, you know, that's why she had the longevity, was because of everything she did after the banana skirt. Right. And I was so healed to know that a woman who did not possess mainstream beauty, who wasn't born wealthy, who was born in the wrong time, still managed to make her way and leave her mark on the world generations to come. And that felt so healing to me, to have a tangible example of a woman I could become. Like, I had always had the dreams when I was younger. I would sneak out. Most little girls or teenage girls sneak out to see boys. I would sneak out of the house to talk to the moon. And I would just dance with the moon and dream and talk about these big dreams. And she was just this healing force to me, because she was evidence that my dreams weren't crazy, for one, that they weren't out of reach or out of touch.
She busted through the limiting beliefs that I'm sure people wanted to put on you.
That they did, that they did. And even when I got in burlesque, I still had to fight that.
Like what?
You know, it's ongoing. You know, so when I came onto the scene, see, now there's a whole black and brown movement in burlesque that's very visible. And although there were black performers who came before me, there weren't any black performers who were invited to perform with Dita Von Teese. There weren't any black headliners who were invited to private islands in New Zealand.
Okay.
And going to places called New Caledonia that I had never heard of until I became this headliner of burlesque. And because I didn't look the part, I got it. There was a lot of backlash from not just white producers and performers, but also black performers, you know, who just didn't feel like I was a proper representative for them because I was performing Josephine Baker and decided to have the strength to put on the banana skirt. I'm knowing all along that I wasn't going to have it on forever, just like she did. But I was like, this is the image of her that people recognize. So let's just get the foot in the door. And then I'll worry about making my own door once I learn how to make the door from Dita Von Teese and these other white producers.
Right.
And another issue was that I did all of my acts barefoot. And so, cause I was doing backflips and I was doing toe touches and I was doing Josephine Baker. So I was just wild, uninhibited. And so a lot of burlesque back then was all about the corsets. Like now you see different, like you said, you saw a whole different type of show. You didn't see people prancing. You didn't see people, like most people looked just like Dita when I started, but they didn't have Dita's budget or her je ne sais quoi. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of people, she was the prototype. She was what you needed to look like and how you needed to move. So then you had me being the total opposite of that. And especially dancing barefoot, people were outraged. They were like, a queen and a lady must have shoes on when she's doing burlesque. And they would get so mad at me because I would say things like, well, what about Lily St. Cyr? What about Josephine Baker, who was still to date, in my opinion, the most successful burlesque performer? Are you implying that these women were not burlesque queens because they danced barefoot? Also, I understand that you learned how to do burlesque by attending a burlesque school, and these burlesque schools are wonderful. Mm-hmm. I work at them, but I had the luxury of being taught by this white woman named Wild Cherry, who was a true burlesque icon and queen on Bourbon Street back in the day. And this white woman, you know, she would be cast aside now because they would, you know, say it's cultural appropriation, but her specialty was Afro dance. And she did a lot of Asian inspired performances. So they were all barefoot. And this was the woman who was like one of my closest mentors in the burlesque world. And I'm like, well, there's an actual legend who danced barefoot, who's telling me I'm doing burlesque the right way. And you learned at a school.
So I'm gonna go ahead and color outside these lines.
You know, but of course, you know, 10 years later, now the way I performed back then is kind of the staple. Now everyone is required to dance or you're considered boring. So many people dance barefoot now.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I do the, you know, I started out in Central Movement doing the pole dancing and loved it. But the minute they were like, let's try some heels, I was like, no, I need to feel the ground. I wanted to feel stable, and I felt just connected to something. And the heels, I got it. It did change my demeanor and it lifted my energy in a different way. Yeah. But I was like a newborn colt out there. It didn't have the same confidence. It forced me to go way too damn slow. I was like, I'm gonna bust my ass. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Especially the stripper heels. Those are full on. See, once I did put on heels, I had the nice little safe ballroom shoes.
Right.
But those stripper heels that's another beast.
Girl.
That's another
girl. The first time I had them on, I just know that the floor came down faster than I knew it could. So I got to ask you, my lady, you have formulated a class or a workshop where you take your burlesque and you're able to actually work with women now to heal their insecurities and all the things that you named before. What does that look like?
Oh, I love it so much. Thanks for asking. So my healing through seduction came by accident. So I thought I was teaching regular burlesque classes back in the day. I started my healing through seduction workshops in like 2014. And I started my online burlesque school in 2014, where I was just exclusively offering healing through seduction and one-on-one burlesque sessions. And so my classes, I thought, were just regular burlesque classes. But I was asking these performers because they're like, they're coming to my class. They're like, well, I want to do what you do. I said, okay, great. Then stop trying to be pretty and go out there and create an act that's inspired by your resilience. And I would say things like, okay, so you say to me, you're going to be sexy. You're going to entice the audience because you're a burlesque. I said, okay, well, entice me, seduce me. And everyone would freeze. And I say, so how are you going to seduce an audience when you can't even seduce me right now? I said, well, try to seduce your reflection. Almost 99% of the students would instantly cry when I would ask them to look at their reflection. And that was the first lesson. You have to be able to seduce your own reflection before you can seduce others. And how you do that is starting with the vulnerability. You have to be vulnerable with yourself. That's part of seduction. That's the part of seduction that I don't think people understand. Like anyone that has seduced us or any like historical seducers, they usually seduce by being vulnerable or we're seduced by their trauma.
Okay.
Okay. We're all going to pause there. And so we're going to pause there. And so how it looked was I would, and I still do this with my virtual classes. I usually always start by asking people to be okay with bringing their resilience in the room and the entire story, not just one chapter or one sentence. And I ask them to think about everyone that they've been seduced by, everyone that they've been in love by. And I'm like, and chances are high, you were seduced, one, by their trauma, and one, by their vulnerability to share that trauma with you. So why then do you deny yourself that same amount of grace?
Shit. Okay, hold on. We got to pause right there. I got so many things that are, my brain is exploding all over the place. The first thing is the piece, you said resilience several times. And I have a friend that she and I, you know, I've talked, I'm going to have her on too. And I may have a series that I'm going to call you back for, where I just want to talk about resilience.
Perfect.
And is this something that can be taught, or is this something that you inherently have? And me and my girl go back and forth about this, because for me as a life coach and essential movement instructor, I want to believe that, yes, there are people who have it naturally, and I want to believe that we can actually show people or help them find their resilience. No, like you can't put it on them, but to help them find it, to believe that they can be resilient, you know, and I want to believe that that is possible. So I'm hearing you say that, and the way you put it too, I never even thought about seduction in that way. I always think about seduction as one being a more dominant energy over the other, which it can be that way sometimes, right? But the idea that you're seduced by, you know, someone's vulnerability and their trauma and you having that rescue thing or whatever it is that transpires there, that's interesting too.
Yeah.
So the resilience thing, tell me, what do you think? Can it be taught? Obviously, you're doing it.
It absolutely can be and should be taught. But I think the reason why we don't think that it that people are born with it is because of society and the way everything is structured. And what I mean by that is most of us, especially young women, we are taught from a very early age that we are to be rescued. We are to be rescued by our pastor. We are to be rescued by our preacher, or our priest, whatever it is. We are to be rescued by a man, you know, even though there are different genders and different sexualities.
In general.
I'm just talking about what we are taught. We're talking about what we're really taught when we first arrive into this world, unless you have a progressive parent. But society teaches us that we are to be rescued. So how can you believe in your own strength when your very existence depends on you being weak?
Right.
So that's another thing too. When I think about resilience and I teach resilience, I often ask these women to start by retraining their mind and retraining their connection to surrendering to themselves. And especially Black women, I ask them, Black and brown. And when I say brown, I mean all ethnic women. That's Asian, that's, you know, Latinas. Because we know Black and brown people come in different shades. Some are fair and some are dark, but they still Black and brown to me. But I teach Black and brown women specifically to surrender the idea that their validation and their worth is connected to their pain and doing it
that
all
part.
On their own. Doing it all on their own. You know, we have to come to a point to where we celebrate ourselves without celebrating our pain.
Oh my God,
and
yes.
Exhaustion.
Say one more time, please, for the people in the back.
You know, we've got to get used to celebrating ourselves. We've got to come to a point where we're passionate and we're accustomed and it's second nature and it's normalized for us to celebrate ourselves, celebrate our wins without there being a connection to our pain and exhaustion. So that's where that resilience, bringing it back to that resilience and understanding that resilience also isn't just about how much pain you can endure. Also understanding, like, these are things I want to help redefine: being humble and being resilient. So resilience is not about you taking beating after beating. Resilience can be you acknowledging that you need help, that you need therapy, that you need to break a generational curse and you cannot do it on your own, that you need to tap into your sensual power for yourself. You need to actually be able to understand what consent is, even with yourself, so that you can tell a partner. You need to have the resilience to acknowledge that there are some beings and some entities in your body, in your womb, that need some healing, that your inner child needs to be acknowledged. So these are examples of resilience as well. Resilience being like mm-hmm. you, starting this podcast, taking on this new endeavor, this new adventure. This mm-hmm. is an example of resilience. Resilience is not just about how much pain we can take and how much we can allow someone to beat us and how right. we can be the right. bigger person.
I love that. I love that explanation. I think that, you know, I know that I've had people tell me, oh, you're so resilient. And it's because from their eyes, you know, I lost both my parents within 2 years of each other to cancer. And then right around that same time, oh, I wow. also lost my 12-year-old goddaughter to leukemia. And then one of my closest cousins. And it was all within like a 4-year period. And I just remember people watching me and, you know, I just have a certain, I just have the way of dealing with death, the way I deal with it. You know, I obviously am hurt by it. I'm pained yeah. by it. I also have an understanding that mm-hmm. it just comes for us when it comes for us. And I don't spend a lot of time asking why.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's a question I'll never get answered. I've understood that, you know, it's just an understanding that this is things like this yeah. happen sometimes. And so I yeah. allow myself yeah. to feel the pain in my time, but to the outside viewer, oh, you're this pillar of strength. And look at you. How are you not falling apart? And mm-hmm. I'm like, first of all, you don't know what I'm doing behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. Okay. Second of all, you know, I don't think we all don't grieve the same way, but it doesn't mean that the way you're grieving, if you are falling apart, is making you weak. That's what made me uncomfortable, is that they were putting me on a pedestal as if this is the way it should yeah. be done. And I'm like, that's not true.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, they don't know what you
yeah.
were doing when you were alone or in therapy or, you know, whatever you were doing for your spiritual peace. And also understanding, and one of the things that's important to me, I'm glad you brought up the falling apart, is that I teach that that is resilient. And going back to my burlesque career and journey, the reason why I became so successful was because not only was I not afraid to have this uninhibited spirit while dancing, but each time I went on stage, it was a deliberate, intentional healing session between me and the audience. And I would mm-hmm. pause and let them see me cry. I would let them see my entire story. And so I teach that cry every day. Cry when you need to. That is powerful. That is your strength. That is resilience. And also, it is a free, natural healing resource that we have yes. that we're not
I believe
utilizing
that. I do
enough.
Believe that. You were saying before too about what was happening, you know, when you were thinking more so about Black women and the experience that we've had or the expectation, you know, that we're supposed to be strongest and yeah. stronger and handle all the stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mm-hmm. when I started doing the central embodiment work, one of the things that came into my mind was I wanted this offered to more women of color. You know, I wanted to see more women of color in it. And what excites yeah. me about me doing this podcast is it's causing me to now go and search for more coaches mm-hmm. and instructors mm-hmm. and healers, spiritualists, just as you are, that are of color, though, that are actually mm-hmm. in the arena, but you don't see them. You don't see them because you're, you know, we all know why. I mean, but do I have to spell it out? It's just because we get overlooked. You know, it's not that I got to remind myself, y'all didn't just pop out of nowhere yesterday. You've been here. I just didn't know where to look. I just didn't think yeah. to look until this caused me to say, wait a second, who's out here doing this work besides me and maybe one other person I know, you know? And I love that because I think this year in particular, 2020, when this airs, it'll be 2021, but 2020 to me was a year that said to Black people, people of color, brown people in particular, therapy is okay and we need it.
Yeah.
And while we want a whole lot to change in the world, the focus needs to really be on our personal healing first and foremost.
Absolutely. First and foremost. And then this is a perfect segue into them being humble also. So yes, and this is... As popular as I am in burlesque, I am also a villain to many, and to many Black burlesque women in particular. And I'm about to tell you and your audience why. Because as we talk about the fact that we don't see these Black and brown healers, and that there are a lot of white gatekeepers, but the main issue is that Black healers, Black performers, Black entrepreneurs do not promote themselves in the same way, myself included. I just started really focusing on promoting myself as a healer. And because we are so busy being humble, the wrong definition of humble, that's how come we're also overlooked, because we don't sit there and also take the time to take marketing classes. The reason why we know more about white everything is because of the way marketing works. So if you are a Black or brown person who is a healer, who does sensual embodiment work, who's an entrepreneur, who's an artist, whatever you do, understand that there's a cost to being quote unquote humble. And so what I mean by that is a lot of people are like, well, we should be humble, and you don't go around bragging about yourself. I'm doing air quotes, everybody, bragging about yourself. You don't go around talking about your happiness when other people are down. You don't promote your Black or brown joy or your business when we're being killed out on the street. No, that's exactly when you do it, because otherwise what we see a slew of white people promoting that they are inspired by Black pain. And because they're inspired by Black pain, they want to then give us opportunities to create Black joy. I'm gonna let y'all sit with that. So it's like you got to, so if you want to be humble, if you want to be humble and you want to wait for white people to recognize you, for Black people to recognize you, then also suffer the consequence of not being recognized, of not eating, of not being seen. So it's like, that's the problem too. It's where, and like you say, we're so focused on changing white people's minds, their ideology, how they betray, portray us on TV, on anything. It's like, right, that's fine. But our focus should be on first healing ourselves so that we can understand the importance of our joy and putting that on display. So we can understand the importance of our healing so that we understand, first of all, first and foremost, people, the revolution has to be financed. Now, I'm looking around for those of you who are not with us in this virtual studio, looking around to see if anyone hears me. First of all, the revolution has to be financed. It's not enough for Black and brown people to go online talking about Black Lives Matter, talking about give us an opportunity, give us this, give us that. White people do this, white people do that. It's like, that's great. Except for the fact that your fan base has the same ideas that you have. So you're not really creating change when you're telling other Black people who follow you that somebody died today. They know because they watch the news. But what can be beneficial is you showing Black joy, Black peace, Black financial evolution and security.
So instead of running the same story tape, like we know.
I mean, I hear it because I've had a lot of backlash because I don't promote, I don't reshare videos of our people dying. I don't do the Black Lives Matters post because the majority of my fan base, they know that. And if there are some trolls in there,
that's
not
going to
change
their
mind online. All I'm going to do is suffer. That's the thing too, that a lot of Black and brown people don't understand is that you need to preserve your energy. So you're fighting online, and politics online does work, but you need to be a celebrity to truly change someone's mind. Let's talk about that truth. So it's like, also we have to learn how and when to fight. And like you said, we have to get in the habit of spending more time healing first. That's how you recharge yourself so that you can actually go fight.
Yeah.
Have some strength behind the punch.
That that part, slow we have strength brain, behind the punch. Because I mean, here's the thing: there was just a lot, and I don't want to veer off too far, but there was just so much energy this year that I saw, and so much beautiful, you know, instances of people really trying to come together. Obviously, to create, and they did. They made noise. Like people were making noise out there in the street. You know, it definitely woke the world up. And I was like, okay, now what? Right. So I see all these, you know, white advertisement or white, I would say companies that were predominantly featuring white people. Now they're all scrambling and everybody's doing all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, that's great. I'm not going to worry about what took you so long or why we had to actually do all of this to get everybody's attention. I was like, that's fine. But what, okay, now what what does the community do? You know? You know, what does the community do? I want to circle back though for a second. Again, you obviously are going to have to come back. you're going to have to come back. But I want to circle back to the reflection thing. And this is important to me because I got to tell you, when I first started my sensual movement journey, like I said, it was a pole dancing class. And, you know, the philosophy very much was about, this class was about you falling in love with you and your sensual energy. And while originally we were taught to, you know, this is what you're doing if you're seducing someone. Like it was very much, you know, about you, but you doing it for somebody else. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And one of the things though, that was the first thing people noticed, there were no mirrors in the room. And that was on purpose. That was on purpose. And I love that there were no mirrors in the room because I knew if they had been, it would have been a very different energy. And the first thing I saw was women relax, right? Because I'm like, I don't want you to worry about what it looks like. I want you to think about what you're feeling. And if you're feeling awkward, that's fine. But get into your body as opposed to what your body looks like, right? The thing is that at some point, though, your image is there. Your reflection is everywhere. I don't want them walking through the house covering mirrors, you know? So at what point in the game, I had to figure out when I took it on and I left that studio and I went on to become a life coach so that I could add a little bit more to it. So I was better prepared to help some of the women that were having like straight up like breakthroughs and breakdowns. Like a woman running up to me after class one day and she was like, what just happened? I'm like, you just had an amazing dance. That's what I saw. I mean, it was beautiful and truthful. She's like, but I'm crying. Like, turn this shit off. You can't. She literally was like, she said, you can't crack me open and leave me like this. And I was like, damn. Yes.
And she was right, too. And that's the thing, too, as us healers. It's like, I remember the first time that happened to me, that's what made me want to do the online ongoing sessions back in 2014. Because that's the thing. You literally crack their heart open and then... Right. Unless they already have a therapist, which most of them don't. They're just wandering.
Yeah. She's like, I went in to do a sexy dance and I'm sobbing. And they don't realize the energy that's going to move through their body. So, you know, we started talking about that a lot. But when I went out on my own to do my own thing, I decided to try the mirror. And I got to tell you, you know, I had mixed results. I had one student that really, she was angry with me. She was mad. She was like, I wasn't ready for that. And I was like, okay, but what, you know, what needs to be done there? Because it broke my heart that she didn't see what I was seeing. That part, you know, and I'm like, I wish I could take my eyeballs out of my fucking head and put them in yours so you could see the beauty that I see in you. But she just couldn't. So, you know, I go back and forth on the mirrors, but I really do think there's something there. How do you integrate the reflection into your work, knowing that women feel so some kind of way about the mirror?
Let me tell you, it's a very simple answer. And I tell them at the beginning of class that I tell them that they may leave hating me. They may leave hating themselves. And that's why a nurturing plan of action is important. But that I have an obligation to show up fully and do my job. And my job is to help them to stop relying on surrogates. And you can't do that until you can look at yourself, babies.
Yeah.
It's just impossible to do. You know, and I remind them, it's like, so if you admire me and you want to become like me, you signed up because I have something you want, then you have to trust that I know.
Right.
And understand the process that I created. So you can trust that or not. And I and what you have to do when you are leading these kind of classes or sessions, however you word it, you have to be okay. Every day I'm like, you have to be okay that you're not going to heal them all and that you will, some will leave.
Oh, that's hard. That's
feeling
so
as though you're a
hard.
Villain. That's the hard part. And you know, one thing too, that I suggest that I just started doing during this pandemic, because I understand people are even more fragile and more raw and exposed. I've been telling people, and I'm going to start doing this too in live classes. I tell them in the beginning, I need your consent to be flawed. And I need your consent to nurture the entire group. Understand that you didn't sign up for a private session. So know that your needs, all of your needs may not be met today. And this is a group effort, but that's the beauty of healing. Yeah, there's, I also want to normalize communal healing. You know, it's different. And so I ask them for that permission and I tell them, and please, part of what I want to do is help you to honor your truth. So at any point during our time together, if you no longer feel safe, seen, or heard, please leave. And people have been leaving. And, you know, and it's on Zoom, so you can hear them.
Yeah.
You get the notification, whatever that sound is. And, and it is startling. It's in my body. I'm like, oh no, someone was triggered. Oh no, maybe someone's traumatized. But I have to, I allow myself to feel that grief. But then I'm like, but you know what? There are 20 other people that are still present. And, you know, I have to understand that my style of healing.
That's okay.
Or teaching
that's been my practice for quite some time now. Because, you know, as a very new teacher, I've done it for like about 10 years. But when I first started out, for every 3 students that would transfer into my class, 2 would leave. And I'm like, wait, where are you going? And I remember just being worried about the ones that left. And I was like, what did I do wrong? What did I say? You know, and then, you know, what I did find out a lot of times, it would come down to shit like, well, you know, I didn't like your music, or, you know, I don't know. It was kind of uncomfortable for me, and it's weird to do it with other women. So it really, a lot of times, had nothing to do with me necessarily. Right. It was really just what they were perceiving in the class, how it was, you know, coming through their lens that they grew up with. And it really got nothing to do with me. And I was like, okay. You know, so what am I going to do? Like, I play a lot of, you know, beat heavy music. I'm not going to start playing, you know, whatever. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Because it didn't resonate with me.
Taylor Swift.
So, you know, I also love that quote that I said at the top of this. I was like, I've tried. I can't. And I respect Taylor so much, but she just doesn't pull me to that place. You stated in that quote that I said earlier that, you know, when you're healing in this way, that it helps people, women, find their voice and their boundaries. And I thought that was interesting because, again, you know, I just think in general, we have such a limited view of what sexuality is connected to and sensuality is connected to. I think we have a limited view of what these classes are actually capable of doing. You know, like, people come to my class, they're like, I just thought I was going to swing on a pole. Or I thought I was just going to learn how to dance sexy. I didn't know all this other stuff was going to happen. I'm like, I understand, but this is the juice. You want this, right? Because this is the real thing. This isn't like, I'm going to teach you something cute that you're just going to slap on. This is something like rooted in you so that it stays, so that you're really, truly confident and it's not some false performance, right? When you work with women, what do you think is happening with that sensual connection that helps them find and open their voice?
I think it is experiencing patient energy, if that makes sense, and slow discovery. And what I mean by that is one of the things I really love to do is do a guided sensual touch exercise with the women and like really asking them to truly slow down and to touch them.
Yeah.
The way most women dream of being touched. Every woman is different. But a lot of women really wish their lover, especially if their lover is a man, would actually enjoy the art of foreplay and not see it as a task, but as a beautiful moment of self-discovery. And so because a lot of women have never experienced that sexually, even if they've had orgasms, even if they've had a healthy, enjoyable sex life, when I ask them to touch their skin, when I ask them to breathe, mm-hmm. when I ask them to cuss their vagina while touching their heart and understanding that connection, they are usually truly blown away, because even when they touch themselves, even mm-hmm. masturbation is a quickie for most people.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm over here leading you for 30
the touch is
to
key.
45 minutes of just touch. And, you know, the touch is key. And so I think once you allow yourself to touch yourself, to experience self-discovery, quiet, calm, peaceful self-discovery, and I also encourage them to ask themselves for permission, to give themselves consent. So we're practicing consent, and then to say out loud, oh, I don't like when my hand is here. I don't like when my hand is here. That doesn't do anything for me. Then that's how you practice consent and boundaries with yourself.
Oh, shit. So it makes it easier. Totally going to borrow that. I love that. I love that, because I teach everything. The hand is on the body throughout the entire class. And I use the terminology, invite your hands, you know, like invite them onto your body, because originally, and still happens, it's like opposing magnets. I'm like, put your hands on your body. It's like, won't, it just will not, the hand will not come. They will hover. They will be somewhere about and around, but I'm like, no, I mean, if you're going to let somebody else put their hands on your body, how do you not? Like, do you know what your vagina looks like, your yoni looks like? Like, I say to people, I'm like, you should be able to pick her out in a lineup. And if you can't, and the only one who can is your gynecologist and your esthetician and your lover, then there's a problem. That's a lot of people that know what your vagina looks like. There's a lot of people who know what it looks like, but not
there's
you.
That's a problem. And if your lover is the only person that you experience ecstasy with, freedom, self-discovery, kindness, nurturing energy.
No, that's I'm not even fucking with you right now. Like, I really, I need you.
I love you.
I need you in my life all the times.
Same.
So same. I want to know, I'm so out of my mind. Like, I lost my place in my notes, but I want to know, with burlesque and healing, hang on, people. I'm like, I'm here. I'm literally like, where did all my stuff go? I want to know, like, you've got, what is it called again? Tell them again one more time so that they know what to look for. Healing through seduction. Yes, that's what we're thinking
healing
of.
Healing through seduction. Is that what we're thinking of?
So this is your online class that they can experience all these things in, correct? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. So I have a monthly membership program that I offer because I was cracking so many people's hearts opening and being like, bye. And
hello,
they were going, you know, telling me this.
We're not done.
You like, excuse me, get back here. hi, hello. We are still connected. Don't try to abandon me. So that's why I created my Healing Through Seduction membership. But I also do.
Okay, I love that, because I know I want them to have access to know where to find you. But then I'm also thinking, I've had women tell this to me too. They're like, okay, well, it's great when I'm in class with Pearl or with you. But how do I keep this in my daily life? How do I, you know, I get this question a lot from moms. I get this a lot from, you know, some of my professional students that are coming that have, like, you know, 40, 50 hour, 60 hour weeks. Like, how do I keep this on a daily basis? And I try to tell them, I don't think it has to be about a bath bomb every time or a candlelight. So what do you say to your students? How would they cultivate some kind of sensuality on a daily basis?
On a daily basis. Well, okay. I'm going to go back to give an example of what I was talking about. So that's why the Healing Through Seduction Academy is important.
I love
you want to definitely join the membership program. You see what we did there, kids? because she's in charge of her own destiny. Because not only do I meet with these women every week, but I also give out beautiful assignments and I check in with them several times a week. And we all communicate weekly. But also, one of my favorite tricks in the world, one of the things I did for myself, was I decided that every time I nourished my body with food or water, because I understood that if I didn't eat and drink every day, that I would die, that I would just, you know, wither away because I couldn't rely on the nourishment I had a week ago to sustain my body today, right? So the spirituality and the sensual connection is the same. So what I tell my beautiful people, my students and the world, and I'm telling your beautiful people too, is so whenever you drink water or eat, that's a perfect time to give your spirit nourishment. You can do that by saying a quick affirmation in your mind while you're sipping that water, that tea, that libation. You can also pause when you're brushing your teeth, after you brush your teeth, after you wash your face or in the shower, pause and just hug yourself. You can also just take your hand, do a little cup and just grab in between your thighs, which I love to call your source of life.
You know, what just came up to me as I'm listening to you too, is that this, I think
something you can do daily.
What people have to understand is that it's a practice. You're cultivating a practice. It's not something you're just going to whip out on the fly and think it's going to work if you're not in the practice of it. So really what you're saying is it's an adjustment to your daily life. Like really embodying it means that it's not just like, oh, I feel pissed or I feel whatever right now. Let me go try what Pearl said. And it's like, well, I don't think you're going to rev up that way like that. You know, it takes some time. It takes practice to get into that sensual space.
It has to be your daily life. And remember too, I want to say really quickly, have patience with yourself, everybody. Remember, you didn't start off having steak and caviar. You started out as a baby eating with your hands, and then you learned how to eat steak.
Right.
You know, and I know there are vegetarians out there, everybody. Just honor what I'm saying. You know what I'm trying to say. Honor it.
Right.
Just honor what I'm saying.
I feel that. So are you someone who looks at New Year's Eve as a time to set goals or, you know, set intentions? What are you looking at for 2021 for you?
So I absolutely do think it's really good to set intentions and release for the new year. But I think it's important to do it every so like maybe every 3 months, every 4 months. I think it's important not to do this just once a year. You know,
I agree.
I think it's like taking inventory, right? So I think it's important to look at your books more than once a year, because then you're overwhelmed with all of that information, with everything you need to purge.
Yes.
Trying to figure out what you need to keep and what you need to purge. So that's why it's important to do it throughout the year. But as far as 2021, what I'm really excited about is really stepping into being a full-time wellness practitioner and having the strength to honor what my ancestors have been revealing in my divinations, which is that I'm supposed to just have one foot in the burlesque door. And that it's time for me, because I've already done what I'm supposed to do.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I need to honor that transition. And so what I've been doing now is allowing myself to mourn what Pearl Noir looks like and understand who she's becoming now. And so I'm looking forward to having the courage to be every dream that my ancestors whispered in my ear.
Okay, why are you going to make me cry though? Like, that's so beautiful. No, but I resonate with that. I really do. I feel very much has been happening, a very similar thing. It was a hard year for me personally, just because I had to accept that I was outgrowing what I knew and how I'd been doing things with my students. And it was time. And part of this is why this got spurred on this podcast. It was time for me to let some of it go as I knew it and to be brave enough to say, okay, what else do I have to learn? I mean, I know there's tons of shit out there to learn. There's so many different ways to, you know, experience sensual embodiment. Like, I'm definitely getting into your class. I'm like, I missed your two of your intro things that you had going on. And okay. I was like, dang it. So I was like, I got to get into this class. Like, I want to explore your class. I'm going to be studying Tantra soon. I just know there's just so many different paths.
I'm studying Tantra soon too.
Are you?
With Amina. Yeah, with Goddess Amina.
Oh, that's
yes. Cool. I'm in her erotic, conscious erotic touch program for the next like 20 weeks.
Oh my gosh, I can't even. I love that. Look at us. Well, you know, you and I are going to come together at some point in the future.
We have to. Yes, I want you to be a guest for my members program. Please.
I would love. Thank you so much. Yes. I got one more question for you. This one's a fun one. You're having a dinner party, okay? Mm-hmm, and you can invite any three people you want. They could be dead, alive, fictional. I don't care. Who do you invite to this dinner party?
Okay. You know, this is might surprise you. And this person just surprised me. This was the first person that came to my mind when you said fictional. So one of my coaches, when I was younger, knew I was having a hard time. And he gave me the book Push, which a lot of people don't know that that was turned into the movie Precious.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm writing that down. Okay.
And let me just tell you, if you thought the movie was hard, the book was a hard read, but it was also one of those moments like my Josephine Baker moments where I was like, oh my God, you're not alone. So I would invite Precious as my fictional character because I would want to love up on Precious and make Precious feel beautiful and give Precious an opportunity to live the glamorous life with her baby.
Yes.
I would, of course, have to invite Josephine Baker so that I could let her know how much she has influenced me, how much she has healed me. Whew. And I would invite my father, who I did not know. But what I do know of him is that he was an impeccable dresser. He was a bass player, bass guitar. Mm-hmm. And he seemed to influence everything about me, even though I didn't know him.
Wow.
So those are the people that I would choose. My father, Perico Von T. Turner.
That name. A whole name.
Perico Von T. Turner, Josephine Baker, and Precious. Because Precious represents and embodies a lot of people's inner child.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Is there anything you want to leave the listeners with before we come off?
I have had it on my heart like this whole month to just continue to encourage people to do what I did. So when I really started touching people and my healing through seduction classes became very popular in New York, I had just survived my second domestic violence situation. And when we think about domestic violence, I want to also acknowledge that that doesn't necessarily mean that the person has been punched.
Right.
Know that some of your friends have survived domestic violence or domestic abuse by being emotionally or mentally abused. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I experienced. And while I was surviving that heartache, while I was surviving the fact that in my mind, I thought I was to retire from burlesque and move to Asia to be this Indonesian political wife. And he called off the wedding for many reasons, but one was because I left his birthday celebration early to go work with this woman who contacted me, who was surviving a domestic violence situation, and she booked a private session with me. So I came home early to do a healing session, and that upset him.
Wow.
And when I got home, that woman, who I now know is an angel, I never heard from her.
Ugh.
We never had that session.
Wow.
And during that time of me healing myself, I was able to also heal other people. So I had this one class, I'll never forget it. This woman she drove in to New York to take my healing through seduction workshop. The next day she wrote me that she left her husband because she was like, this is no longer safe for me and my child. She booked another session with me. That was 3 years ago. We just had a session 2 days ago.
Wow.
She wanted to let me know how she's doing. And I say this, what my point is that a lot of times we feel that we have to, especially healers out there, hear me when I say, there are many ways to be a healer. And you don't have to quote unquote be right to heal somebody. Mm-hmm. So my last word is to be a blessing. Do not block your blessing. have the courage to heal people and to inspire them where you are, knowing that you don't have to be perfect. Inspire by your resilience. So my resilience at that time was acknowledging that I was falling apart. And to some people, some loved ones, some friends, I admitted that I was falling apart. And to them, that meant I shouldn't be doing healing sessions. But to this woman who left her husband, she has another story to
tell. Wow. That really resonates with me, because that, you know, I like to believe that what I go through allows me to share it with my students, as opposed to having to hide it or pretend that I'm somehow someplace beyond them, as opposed to them recognizing, like, I know some stuff that I'm guiding you through, but don't assume that that means I'm completed in some way, or that I've reached some, you know, some point. Like, I had a client in my life coaching stuff, and she was like, you know, just a little frustrated, thinking she was doing something wrong, because, you know, like the wicked little voice in the head started bullshitting again, and not managing it the way she's used to being able to manage it and how we've worked to manage it. And I was like, but you're not doing anything wrong. This is a lifelong process. Like, that voice still comes up for me and comes out of pocket, and I got to put it back in its place and remind it what its purpose is. And it's an ongoing thing. So, you know, I think with any of this work that women are coming to us for, it's to understand, again, this isn't the quick fix. This isn't, well, you know, Pearl said, let me cup my yoni and my heart and it'll be better tomorrow. It has to be a day. I wish it was that instantaneous. It has to be. Put a little hand buzzer on. Okay, let me stop. But like, but oh my goodness. But it has to be like, it's a true commitment, a dedication to your well-being, and it's ongoing. And it is not, you know, if anything, I tell people what I know has allowed me to navigate things a little easier than I did before I knew it. But it doesn't mean I don't fall into those places anymore.
Right, right. And that's such a beautiful sentiment and statement. Yeah, knowing that your whole story is what is going to help heal people and you, if you allow it to.
Exactly, that part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can only say one more time, I fucking love you. I'm obsessed. I am a fan. You are wonderful, man. I loved it. I'm excited for what you're doing. I will make sure that they have all of your information when this episode airs and they know how to reach you. And even before that, I will be promoting and sending and, you know, putting on my stories, anything I can, because I want the world. Any of my followers who don't know, I know the world knows who you are, but I'm saying, my followers, if they're not sure, now you know. If you don't know, now you know, okay?
Ditto. I want to support and promote you as well. We should do like a little collaboration.
Oh, yeah. We can do an IG Live one time.
Yes,
I love
we should.
That. Pearl, you have a happy new year.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You do the same.
Thank you for listening to the Electric Feminine Podcast with me, your host, Anjua Maximo. This is never a solo operation, so I must give big thanks to my team. Thank you to my podcast producer, Ritz Pastel, my music creator and sound editor, Nick Brilla, my graphics and social media team, Studio West Design. And if you're ready to learn more about the power of sparking your sensual energy and creating an electric life, you can find my private coaching information at anjuamaximo.com. You can also follow me on IG at The Electric Feminine for new episodes and daily doses of inspiration, sensuality, and personal growth. Be good to you and be good to each other.